Hello, welcome to Conversations from the World of Allergy, a podcast produced by the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. I'm your host, Dave Stukas. I'm a board-certified allergist and immunologist and serve as the social media medical editor for the Academy. Our podcast series will use different formats to interview thought leaders in the world of allergy and immunology. This podcast is not intended to provide any individual medical advice to our listeners. We do hope that our conversations provide evidence-based information. Any questions pertaining to one's own health should always be discussed with their personal physician. The Find an Allergist search engine on the Academy website is a useful tool to locate a listing of board-certified allergists in your area. Finally, use of this audio program is subject to the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Terms of Use Agreement, which you can find at www.aaai.org. Today's edition of our Conversations from the World of Allergy podcast series is targeted towards allergists and practicing clinicians, but it's also going to be particularly relevant to anyone who works in a school or has a school-aged child who has asthma, and you'll find out why very soon. Today's guest is Dr. Andrea Pappalardo. Dr. Pappalardo is an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics in the Division of Pulmonary, Critical Care, Sleep, and Allergy at the University of Illinois at Chicago UI Health. Dr. Pappalardo serves as the director for various asthma-based initiatives in her community and beyond, as we'll learn about soon, and has a research focus on health equity, disparities, and asthma. Lastly, and the reason why she's a great guest for today's topic, Dr. Pappalardo has been heavily involved with the school-based allergy, asthma, and anaphylaxis management program, also known as SAMPRO. And that's a mouthful, so we're just going to say SAMPRO from here on out. So with that, Dr. Pappalardo, thank you so much for taking time to join us, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here, Dave.
Oh, my. You're involved in so many different initiatives, and this is going to be, I think, very helpful for our listeners across many different spectrums. But I'd really like to start by just having you offer some insight into your personal path towards focusing your career on asthma, and specifically, if you wouldn't mind touching on, you know, why you got involved in school and community-based initiatives.
Absolutely. So I was in my MedPeds residency at the University of Chicago on the south side of Chicago, and that's where I grew up as well. And so growing up in Chicago, I saw a lot of things, but I didn't quite understand them until I was in medical school and then in residency. And in residency, I saw several adolescents that were being intubated or in the hospital for weeks for severe asthma. And I thought this was ridiculous because we have great medications, we have great subspecialists, and they're sitting here at University of Chicago, University of Illinois, and all the wonderful institutions within the Chicagoland area, yet somehow this keeps on happening. And so it was in residency when I realized that severe asthma in children is a real turning point where we could intervene, and that can save a lifetime of issues if we can really get children controlled when they're younger. Now, what I realized that even if you have many medical centers within a metropolitan or rural area, even, and it's not necessarily equivalent to access. And so you really need to get children the help that they need on a regular basis, preferably outpatient, and in a setting that makes sense. And so hence the turning towards school and community-based settings. School is a trusted neighborhood place where people get many of their meals they go to. And so meeting people where they're at became a very much of an interest of mine in order to achieve what we need in health equity and provide access to people where they need it, when they need it, and how they need it.
I think that's great. And as we're going to talk about, you know, asthma is, of course, so prevalent. It's leading, you know, chronic health condition affecting children of all ages. And it's a big part of missed school days and ER visits and things like that. So the work that you're doing along with others to meet them where they are in the community is fantastic. And along those lines, can you tell us why it's important to provide schools with support for their students who have asthma and allergies?
It is essential that we do because they're not set up as healthcare centers. They are not a healthcare center in many, many times. And sometimes they'll have a school-based health center associated or affiliated, but that's usually ran by a medical home. And one of the issues we come about is that a lot of these children do not have a medical home, or they might be prescribed a doctor through their medical card, through their public insurance, but that provider may be all over the place, stopping, only working between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. A lot of what I do is I try to call providers to coordinate care as a subspecialist. And when I can't even get a hold of them as a physician, you know there's a problem. When people are still getting liquid albuterol, you know there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so this is a huge area where at schools, we might be able to start understanding that connection with the school nursing, you can support their school health, but they just don't have resources. I wish that there was a school nurse in every school, but unfortunately, that's not the reality that many of our children experience. I am fortunate to have a daughter with asthma, but I am fortunate to have a school nurse in her school that's there 24/7 and has a good backup in case she's gone. And many children don't have that backup. I can tell her to give her smart therapy and they know what I'm talking about. Most places that don't have a nurse don't have that capacity. They don't have money. They don't have resources. And if we are able to provide the infrastructure and help guide to a medical home and incorporate the school and the community within that medical home, then we will only support our children and their growth and their development, not only physically, but academically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, we've had some recent episodes actually discussing some more details about asthma presentation and some of the newer approaches to management, even an episode talking about indoor air quality and some of the triggers found in schools and things like that. So we won't take a deep dive into that necessarily during today's conversation. But before we start talking about SAMPRO and stock albuterol and things like that, in your opinion and experience, what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions surrounding asthma in general?
I think there are, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding of what asthma is and how we treat it. So a lot of people believe that the medications that we have, especially the inhaled corticosteroids, which are a mainstay of asthma, and we have decades of experience, although they have side effects, there's no doubt about it, that they're very, very helpful, and they can prevent hospitalization and mortality if we use them. However, many people believe they're addictive because when you come off of them, you get worse. But it's not like an opioid or something along those lines. We're actually addressing that inflammation. And that leads to a lot of people to deny that they have asthma because they're just afraid of using those asthma medications. And oftentimes they'll feel fine, quote unquote, and they'll be like, I don't have asthma, I don't need those things, and we're good to go. But the reality is it's far from that. The more we learn about asthma, the more we realize that inflammation is there, and it's what's causing all of those things that we might not see on a day-to-day. And it just takes one little thing like a mouse infestation in the school to just tip you over the edge to not being able to breathe. And hopefully you have an inhaler there to help you when you do.
Yeah. You know, as I was thinking about our conversation today, years ago, I started a list of the scary things that my patients were being treated with at school, non-albuterol, things like, you know, just take a deep breath, drink some water. One was actually put in a room with an essential oil diffuser. I don't know why they thought that would be helpful. Can you think of some of the scary stories that you've heard about, you know, kids who don't have albuterol at school, what they're told to do during an asthma exacerbation?
Well, it's kind of mayhem. And so yeah. When you talk to nurses, it's been very powerful. One of the works I'm doing right now in my research is to talk about to nurses in schools that have been in exactly the situation. They're giving them Coca-Cola. I mean, they're doing whatever they can, you know, to try to get them through this until help comes. Children ideally would have, if everyone was diagnosed with asthma when they actually have it and they were actually treated with guidelines-based care, and then they actually were allowed to by their insurance to get an extra inhaler at the school, and then they remembered because they were self-caring to bring that inhaler, but they're 12 and you know how that goes, then we have an inhaler, we can give it to them and we can go, and the district policy supports it, right? Doesn't just say call 911 or like good luck, right? Mm-hmm. And trains them to be able to do it, then we would be in a good situation. But that's not where we're at. You know, we really need to support the schools to be able to take care of these children. Children are dying. They're dying because they can't get their asthma controlled. The funniest one I heard is Coca-Cola. The worst things are it took 45 minutes for this child and they were looking near death before they came. And, you know, we see that especially in the rural areas where EMS or emergency services may take way too long and then children are left there with nothing. And that is not acceptable. And nurses don't want that either. Anyone in the school can recognize respiratory distress. It's kind of obvious. And you want to do something for them. And this, what we'll talk about next, is a way to go and do that.
Yeah. I wish you had some passion surrounding this. My goodness, you are. Your energy is amazing.
Not at all.
I want to bottle it. Yeah. Well, okay. So walk us through SAMPRO. Like, what's the origin story surrounding this? How did this all come together? And then we'll get into some of the details regarding, you know, what this can do for schools and stock albuterol and stuff like that. But tell us about SAMPRO.
Yeah, SAMHRA was a presidential initiative, I believe, back in 2015 to 16 by Dr. Rob Lemansky, who is amazing and still a huge part of our committee and someone who I speak to on a regular basis as I try to continue on his legacy here. What he did is he approached school-based asthma management, and it started with asthma management. It's since expanded to allergy and anaphylaxis, which we'll touch in a minute, I'm sure. But he wanted to do things right. And when I say do things right, is a lot of times we will take an idea and we'll like reinvent the wheel and keep on trying to do what somebody else may have done. Instead, he said, let's take a step back. Let's convene stakeholders, discuss what the ideal for school-based asthma management is, and think about how we can all work together to not duplicate, but come together with this this idea that school-based asthma management has multiple components. They came up with four components of school-based asthma management, which you can find on the website today, that really start with the circle of support. And that's what he started creating. That circle of support is the people that are internal at the school and the community surrounding and the medical home and facilities, and then up through the national organizations like our own, that really support what people can do in school every day to support respiratory and allergy health. And that's where SAMHRA came about. And the white paper that was published in 2016 by Dr. Lemansky and the many collaborators, including Dr. Kakamanu and many others that are within the QuadAI, with the National Association of School Nursing, the American Lung Association, the Network of Asthmatic Mothers. So there's many people that were involved that produced this document that went through these four components that were essential. Since then, with the work with our collaboration with American Academy of Pediatrics, we've been able to expand that to include allergy and anaphylaxis, all within the school-based realm. So Drs. Julie Wang and others have been very essential in bringing this all together to incorporate all of the AI diseases that we might see in school and help nursing and administrators and people that are without a nurse that are struggling to figure out what to do, how to navigate it. And it provides tools so that there, if you want an asthma action plan that's been vetted by multiple places, if you want an anaphylaxis action plan, it's all there. And we recently transitioned to a new website to do that. Now, it's still a work in progress. It's one of my newer to-dos, but you'll find out about why I haven't quite gotten there yet in a minute.
And you know, you mentioned a couple of the names that are friends of the podcast. We've actually had a couple of episodes over the last few years. We had Dr. Lemansky on a couple of years ago to talk about this as well. But it's always great to kind of go back and think through where this sort of started from. So we're going to put a link to the website in the show notes. But can you describe, you know, what's available through the website? You mentioned asthma action plans. What else can people find to support schools?
Well, hot off the press is these new toolkits that we put together. The American Academy of Pediatrics and the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, they both came together to ask us if we would be willing to do a toolkit for stock epinephrine and stock inhalers in schools. And what we found was there was a gap for a national toolkit that really gives a step-by-step. So if a school administrator with no health background at all that is struggling because they don't have a nurse in their school or has one and recognizes they're an asthma problem and they're within a state that may have a stock inhaler law, then they can go to these toolkits and get a step-by-step no matter where they are in the process. They might not have a law yet. They have some background and resources. They have a law, but they don't know what's in it. There are some resources. They are starting to implement, but don't know what to do or how to get a provider or how to get the medications. There are resources. They are struggling with training. There are training options and little pearls of little infographics that you can put up to say, this is what respiratory distress is or not, and this is how you can differentiate between respiratory distress and anaphylaxis. Each of these toolkits have been recently added to the website in the last week or so. It's super exciting. They're long documents, but what they do is they have a table of contents. So what you need, you can just go, boop, I need that. I need the understanding of the state law or my school staff need help in respiratory distress. Look at this infographic. We have what's normal in a child for their breathing and what's not, and what a child would look like and what they wouldn't, and resources to find out more if you need a YouTube video or whatever, you know? So that's kind of the newest and brightest. We're currently working on a PowerPoint to kind of highlight these changes that will be updated. And then a video that will kind of summarize all that you can find in SAMHRA. But that's to be continued on those last few points.
All right. So it's already a treasure trove of resources, and it's only going to get better, it sounds like. That's fantastic. Boy, we already touched upon your passion for all this. Do you ever take a moment to just kind of reflect upon the work that you've personally done and maybe what's been the most rewarding part of being involved in SAMPRO? Have you thought about that at all?
What I have, I'm thinking about it right now, to be honest. It's been a whirlwind. And like as I think about it in this moment, I have the first thing that immediately comes to my mind is working collaboratively with everybody. You know, I think I mentioned just a handful of the people, but even my research assistant who took on the role to help with the toolkit, and Sarah Jane from Code Anna, like Code Anna and Dr. Hoyt, I mean, these are beautiful relationships that we've created through this work. And Code Anna has been an amazing resource for us, especially for the Stock Epi kit, the design, the team working with Renee. All of these things are what it is. It's what life is, right? It's the relationships that you build and the way that you can create a project, have everyone work on what's best work for them. We have medical students that can help sort through like what makes sense to them or not, or they're not quite an MD with many years of experience where we might not be able to see what somebody can understand or not, but they're in it. I don't know. It's like recognizing a team member's potential and seeing them, and then also looking at our own faculty. How can they get involved? I firmly believe we're going to be looking for a new vice chair for the SAMPRO. Like, who wants to do it? Who has passion? I want to see people go through and realize their passion and their potential. And SAMPRO will, and other committees that we get involved in, will never be able to stop producing. And so I believe that that is what I find the most beautiful, is the people that make the team work, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. For any, you know, say junior faculty members that are listening, I can tell you from experience, when you meet folks like Dr. Pappalardo and others involved in SAMPRO, if you send them an email and say, hi, my name is such and such, and I'd like to get involved, you will get involved. They will take you under their wing and they will give you the experience that you need. So I apologize in advance if I just flooded your email inbox, but
it's already there. So just add it to the mix.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned another friend of the podcast, Dr. Alice Hoyt. She was just a guest in episode 92, and she did a great job really walking through all of the logistics surrounding stock epinephrine for schools. So we're not going to really discuss that today, and we're going to focus more on stock albuterol. So, Dr. Pappalardo, can you walk us through, you know, why this is important and maybe some of the background surrounding that legislation?
Sure. And so stock inhalers, and I like to use the word stock inhalers because stock albuterol is one rescue medication. Mm. The idea is that there's one inhaler at the school just in case somebody doesn't have their own inhaler. And we highlighted a lot of the reasons for this. People have trouble breathing when they're at school. People could be a student. People could be a staff member. People could be a volunteer. And many of the legislation allow for anyone that has respiratory distress to receive a medication. And why is this important? Well, as you mentioned, asthma is common. Asthma is commonly uncontrolled. There are significant health disparities and access to care problems. Even when everything aligns perfectly and a child is old enough to self-carry, that medicine oftentimes doesn't get to the school, even if everything was perfect, asthma action plan and everything. But for the most part, it's not perfect, and we live in an imperfect world. And so this is what we're going to start to navigate, is schools have nothing to do or nothing other than to call 911 when there's a respiratory emergency. And what this does is it helps de-escalate asthma symptoms when they occur in whomever they occur, if somebody in good faith is experiencing respiratory distress. And one small study in Arizona showed that children that had asthma documentation, asthma action plan, when you look to see if they actually had an inhaler present at that school district, only 14% had it. So even when everything aligns perfectly, it's not perfect. And so I think that is really the reason for why a stock inhaler is important. If you piggyback on Dr. Hoyt's amazing podcast, you would be able to also know that like epinephrine is utilized in anaphylaxis and is the first line of defense. But you might also have bronchospasm, for which an inhaler, a stock inhaler, could be used. The reason why I don't only say albuterol is albuterol is not the only rescue medication for asthma. And although most people are familiar with it and schools are not quite there yet for these alternative relievers, the albuterol will be the one that we're going to be instituting at this moment. There's no doubt about it, and that's what we're doing real time in Illinois and other states. However, I recognize that with the advent of the formoterol combined with ICS combinations or inhaled corticosteroids, as well as some of the newer down the pike inhaled corticosteroids with the albuterol combinations, they might be the preferred reliever in the future. And therefore, a stock inhaler could not necessarily be only albuterol.
Outstanding. Does every state currently have legislation allowing for stock inhalers inside the schools? And if so, is it mandatory or voluntary?
No. So 17 states currently. There might be another one that might have passed. So my apologies if it's not exactly up to date. But 17 out of the 50 states have it. And for the most part, it is not a mandate. It is voluntary. However, you know, it is important to recognize that if you have the opportunity, many of the school districts that we've spoken to do want to do it. It's just a matter of logistics. Mm-hmm. And the toolkit helps them through some of those logistics, because we do recognize that it's a hard ask, because with stock epi, it's a little bit easier because you don't have as much anaphylaxis happening. But with asthma symptoms are very common for the reasons we discussed. And it's so common, it's often uncontrolled. There's triggers at schools because of structural reasons and other reasons that you've highlighted in other podcasts, that this is something that we do highly consider schools implement.
Yeah, I think it's important for our listeners to really pause for a second and recognize that this is, you know, only 17 states. So we still have a ways to go in regards to getting this legislation. Personally, here in Ohio, I actually went to the representative who submitted the stock epinephrine legislation. And it was a year later. And I said, hey, can we do the same thing for albuterol? It took them all of 30 seconds to say, yeah, this makes sense. And it was very easy because you sort of already had the blueprint. And what you're going to talk about next is some of the toolkits are already there. So it's really easy for other states to adopt this legislation. It just really requires somebody with the passion to put it forth and try to get it through the legislature. So I encourage everybody out there to think about this if your state doesn't currently have these laws. Do you have any tips for folks listening that might say, hey, this is for us and what can we do about it?
Yeah, I really am happy you asked that. So one of the things that I think you highlighted in Ohio and we did in Illinois is amendments. So when you come up with new legislation, it's very difficult to get that passed. You got to get sponsors, blah, blah, blah. You still need to get a sponsor for an amendment. However, an amendment's so much easier and they usually don't pay attention to them that much. And as a pediatrician or an internist or an allergist, it doesn't have to be an allergist. We can go and we say, hey, we talk to our local representative and we say, well, this is interesting to us. Or you look to see who else has written the school health legislation. For example, the EPI legislation, you see if they're still in the Congress for whatever branch. And you contact them. And for the most part, they love this. Mm-hmm. Kids can breathe. I can totally get on that. And that'll be a mark on my thing that will look good, right? And so constituency that you are a part of, remember, you're not only a doctor, but you're a constituent of these politicians, and you have expertise that they don't, and that they want a win. And this could be an easy win. Now, there might be some opposition. And so what I oftentimes do in my research with this, looking at how I can get a health policy implemented into systems, is I do a stakeholder map. And so it's what I recommend is simple. Talk to your policymaker that is most connected to you, that you would be considered a constituent of, and or somebody who's related to school health in the past, and it's all publicly available knowledge. Then if that's too much, it's okay. Email someone else in your ALA local chapter, tell them to do it, and then you work as a testimonial. The testimonials are fun and easy, and that's something that you can do.
Yeah, that's great advice. Right. Most children's hospitals, as well as the local chapters of the AAP, they have strong government relations. So you don't have to do this on your own or reinvent the wheel. Just reach out, just make the connection, and they can often sort of pave the way. So hopefully this is a bit of a call to arms for our colleagues in other states that don't have the legislation yet, but time will tell, I suppose. Well, speaking of legislation, what does this include? Is it for both inhalers and nebulizers? Is there some Good Samaritan provisions protecting personnel if they administer it to somebody who doesn't need it, or if there's adverse effects? Tell us some of the details.
Yeah, these are great questions. And so recently we put out an American Thoracic Society statement on our recommendations for implementation of stock inhaler policy that kind of highlights two things. One are the differences of the policy between the state, and you can find an infographic on this and a kind of flow chart in the toolkit. I don't remember what page it's on, but it basically says, which state might have what provision within it. They're all voluntary. So most are for all schools, some only public. So you have to double check. Most have provisions for the people that are giving it, meaning the person that prescribes it and the person that's giving it in the school. Some only the person giving it in school. Like George is a good example of, they have provisions to protect the school, but not the provider. And so they've had difficulty getting providers, but they actually have one that just does the whole state. And he is a fantastic person. But you want to have longevity in that. So amendment later on would make sense for that case. And then as far as the Good Samaritan portion of that, it's in Illinois, for example, which is my home state, you're immune. You're immune if you prescribe it. You're immune if you dispensed it. You're immune if you administered it. You're immune if you're the district. And so it's really helpful to support giving the medication and making that less scary to people. And I think that's a really good message for us as potential prescribers of it. As if you're in a state that does have one of those provisions and you can check the toolkit, please prescribe, because it's really not that hard. And then you also get to be that person for a referral network, because nurses are recognizing new people with asthma on a daily basis, and they just don't know what to do with them. And so where do I send them? How do I help connect them? And that's one of their biggest complaints. It's like, I can't connect with anyone. So if you're the allergist that comes out and says, I'm here, I can prescribe this and epi and stock inhalers, you're not going to do the Narcan, that's fine, leave it to be. But then you are the person they think about for when you need to go, when these children need an allergist.
Is this just like a written prescription with the school building, the school name, school district, or is there some order form? Like, with stock epinephrine, as Dr. Hoyt walked through, there's more of like an order form that you can sign and things like that. What's this look like for inhalers?
Yeah. So there's a standing order that needs to be signed. It's basically a prescription that you go into a prescription with the school district or the specific school, depending on the makeup. Because sometimes there's specific schools that are outside of districts and they're ran by superintendents, and et cetera. And so it just depending on that setup. Structurally. However, we have an example of that within the toolkit for both epinephrine and stock inhalers. Okay. And this is going to be very easy to find. And some districts will use that one or adopt that one. You can write, it's not as simple as writing out a prescription. It's more like you have to fill out a form. It's like a memorandum of understanding kind of a prescription, because you're not going to an individual person with a birthday. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about people, how to navigate that within the toolkit. One thing that you mentioned about the prescription before that I want to go back to now, and I think it's an appropriate time, is we do recommend in that American Thoracic Society policy statement to use multimeter dose inhalers with disposable spacers as the recommendation instead of nebulizers. Nebulizers are bulky, they're hard to clean, and you'll be using them for multiple people. Even though we have done it for many years, we are starting to realize that we really need to move to the meter dose inhaler. And giving the disposable spacers allows for the reuse of that multimeter dose inhaler with the proper cleaning instructions that we've described. We do have cleaning instructions for all different types of places. So like if they have the plastic and spacers, how to reuse those. But the recommendation is to really use disposable, but we recognize that people are resource strapped. And so we give options for how to properly clean and do a rotation and all of those things within the toolkit, so people can feel comfortable with approaching cleaning of the meter dose inhaler. But with a spacer and proper cleaning, there's no need to do the smaller actuation inhaler. They're typically 200. We have 60s, the ones that the hospitals buy. Typically, if you were to go to the hospital for asthma, they'd give you a 60 actuation meter dose inhaler. So depending on the school size, that might actually be the better and cheapest option for you as a school, but they don't really have a single use inhaler that would be cost beneficial in this setting.
Sure. It's so nice that all this information is readily available. You know, several years ago when we started implementing this, these were the questions that came up from school districts of what do? We use the inhaler once. Do we have to throw it away? And we had to think through it logistically. They said we couldn't give it to the student because it's not prescribed to them. So I'm glad that a lot of these hurdles have sort of been overcome.
Right. And you have to think about things from a different perspective. Like in our clinic, it's beautiful. We have all these wonderful amenities. But working, one of my jobs is, as you mentioned, I do many things, is I work in the mobile care Chicago asthma van. And so I work in a resource port, like basically areas within the Chicagoland that are historically marginalized, that are known to have high asthma morbidity and mortality. And I go to them in a converted RV. Now, we have to give albuterol on a regular basis because kids come in and, you know, they're not doing okay. And so how do I de-escalate that is through the use of meter dose inhalers with spacers. And we have cleaning protocols. So I have been doing this for years. And so this is not something that is hard for me to envision. However, it's very difficult post-COVID to navigate this, which is one of the reasons why we say, we were already kind of de-emphasizing nebulizers prior to the pandemic. And that just kind of like was in the nail in the coffin. Is like, you know, nebulizers, maybe hospital use, maybe not, but with the potential of aerosolizing COVID and maybe other respiratory particles and the difficulty to make sure that's all cleaned out, and especially when you don't have everything there to do it in a way that makes sense and the time to potentially get through that. I think that the MDI with the spacer, the meter dose inhaler with the spacer that's disposable is the way to go.
But Dr. Pappalardo, the machine works so much better.
Does it? It has equivalency. I think you know. I think that's really funny. Really funny, Dave.
So can you walk us through? So the number of puffs on the prescription, is it 2 puffs every 4 hours? And if you need anything more than that, then you have to go straight to the emergency room? Or
no, you know, I actually, you know, we do 4 to 8. And so I think that's what I really, really talked about with people when I talk about the equivalencies, like 4 puffs to 1 vial of the nebulizer. So if you're giving 2 and then you're giving 4 in the vial, like, okay, yeah. I get it. But if you're giving the equivalent amount, it's the same. And if you're doing it right and you're letting it space. Now, I recognize that not everything is perfect and it's difficult in an emergency situation, but with the proper training and getting that kind of training on board and simulation that we've recommended within the toolkit, it'll be okay. And so we talk about that caution zone and like we do in an asthma action plan, but for emergencies, the yellow caution zone, 4 puffs, okay? If you're in a red zone, you're a mess, 8 puffs. You know, you can repeat it, call 911, when to call 911 within that algorithm. And so something you could actually plaster on the side. But it's a really, we seem to be very like, you know, married to these nebulizers, but it's time for a divorce. And I think it's time because it's so much more mobile, right? And then you don't have the problem. If we divorce ourselves from that, then we think MDIs are so much easier to have around and to store and for many to use. And it helps us with access to medications in the long run.
Yeah, thank you for touching upon that. That's a personal sort of pet peeve of mine. And for anybody listening that says, oh my gosh, if you give more than 2 puffs, you're going to have cardiac toxicity, blah, 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 blah. I just encourage you, go to the GINA website and look at the management of exacerbation. I think it's like 6 to 10 puffs, like every 20 minutes. Like breathing is good. We need to bronchodilate, especially if they're having acute symptoms. So yes, it's
That's
all
evidence. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, how do schools go about procuring these inhalers once they're prescribed, and who pays for it? Do they just walk up to the local pharmacy and get the inhaler and then walk out, or is there more to it?
Potentially. And so that's the one way to do it. Now, having programs that are really nicely set up to service a large number of schools within a state is the ideal, right? So if the Department of Public Health within your state could take that on, great. In Illinois, we're using the Rescue Program, which originated out of St. Louis, which is a part of the AFA, the Allergy and Asthma Foundation of America. And they partner with many of our other advocacy organizations in Illinois, and we secured state funding for this of $2.5 million to cover approximately 80% of Illinois schools who will this fall be receiving stock inhalers and their disposable and plastic spacers, depending in the quantity they require for the school that they're serving, because, you know, there's various sizes and schools, and asthma burden within different counties. And then they will be able to navigate that, and they have an algorithm to decide, you know, how many people need. Now, most of the states don't have that. So only two states at this current time, as far as I know, have state funding, Illinois and then Missouri. Now, that doesn't cover all of the states. So I've had early adopters have gone up to pharmacies and convinced Walgreens, et cetera. CVS has been a little bit less easy to get through, but Walgreens, we have created hubs for this throughout the Cook County area. And we also have relationships with the EpiPen for Schools distributors that would also do stock inhalers. And so those are, that's nationwide. Now, many times what we did to help out, and we provided an Illinois pharmacy letter that we've utilized for those that do not have a good pharmacy relationship or have been told no, or the pharmacy association president has said, hey, this is legit. This is what you what we're seeing. And so we have different ways to navigate whatever barrier you might encounter. Funding is another app. So like the getting the medicine. So for funding, obviously we have funding in Illinois, thank goodness, but there's going to be 20% of schools that don't. I'm working on that next. Mm-hmm. So, and in Missouri, I don't know, but they know at AFA. So when we think about the funding, there is a problem. So in some of the states, they've allowed for donations. The PTO is a parent teacher organizations are a very good way because it's a fairly cheap endeavor per school. About $156 is the estimate. So getting a PTO endeavor or one parent with a kid with asthma to get involved, simple to get it paid for. The district, oftentimes, if I talk to them, are up for doing it when they know it's not that expensive. County health directors have been helpful in this regard. There are multiple avenues to getting funding. We have toyed with the reimbursement for Medicaid. We haven't gotten there yet. That's to be continued. But that would be the ideal, right? You know, you can order it directly from Medicaid and then get it reimbursed or state funded. But right now we just have it state funded in Illinois and Missouri. So that's another thing that once you get a pass, you know, funding becomes a problem for certain schools that this is an issue. Foundations can also be helpful in this regard, and coalitions for asthma within your state. And so others have done that, like in Georgia, where they fully funded the program through coalition money and fundraising. And so it just depends on your state makeup. And there's a lot of different avenues to seek and obtain funding that you can see in our toolkit.
So I love that you highlighted working with advocacy organizations, whether it's on a national or local level, and that, you know, there's a lot of these challenges that exist, and it's going to vary by location, but there's ways to overcome them. And there's a playbook that exists, right? And that's what SAMPRO has done, and that's what the toolkits provide and things along those lines. Well, in addition to, you know, just having the inhaler, obviously, what else do schools need to have in place? Do they need written treatment plans to recognize signs of asthma and actually training on how to administer these medications, or what else do they need?
Yes. So they need a policy, and they need an asthma emergency protocol. So many states have this as a school policy related to asthma that they're required by a state to have an asthma emergency policy. Most have them. But I recommend that the districts revisit them. And the reason is because sometimes they'll say call 911 and they won't include giving a stock inhaler. So we've recommended options for that within the toolkit of how you could, recommendations of sample district policies that are being used in Illinois districts currently, and then also kind of a how-to. What was your second question?
About the training.
Training is required by many states, but not all. But training is recommended. So training is available. The American Lung Association, who we did collaborate with for this toolkit, created an amazing video training that's nationally okay. So like different states might have their own training, like Arizona and Illinois included, where we have our Illinois State Board of Education training that's online and produces a certificate. But many of the orphan states that don't have such an infrastructure required something a little bit bigger. So the American Lung Association thankfully took that on, and we have linked their training to our and within our toolkit, which produces a certificate that could be for nurses or any trained school personnel. So if you find somebody that is navigating school health or has you should have a backup, because if you do have a school nurse and you're so lucky to have one every day, even if there's more than one, if they're going to be sick sometimes, or they're going to be whatever. And so you're going to need to have backups. So any trained personnel at the school can administer stock inhalers. And the recommendation is to be trained annually in approximately one per 225 children, or at least two.
All right. So more resources available. This is great. Dr. Pappalardo, why do you believe that every school that's eligible should participate and have stock inhalers available?
I can't be okay with any child being in any setting, not able to breathe and not having something that is potentially able to save them or to make them feel better. And I think that most people can get on board with that. And that is why I feel so strongly about this legislation and adopting it within school districts nationwide.
Yeah, it's there's no reason not to, right?
That's my opinion. I agree. Of course.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the details that we haven't discussed? We covered a lot of ground. And again, everybody can go to the website and see everything for yourself. We don't expect everybody to remember every word that was said today. But what are we missing? Any other big details that you'd like to discuss?
No, but I would say this is that, you know, whoever's listening, whether they be an allergist, a provider of any sort, or a school nurse or a school administrator, or anyone that works with children in any capacity, maybe a parent with a child with asthma, you have a say. I, in fact, believe that the parent of a child with asthma has so much capacity that they might not realize to say, look, this is something I want available for my kid if they forget their inhaler, because we know how kids are. They're forgetful. They're thinking about going to see their friend. And if they don't have their inhaler and that's the random day that a truck comes by and just releases all this madness and your kid can't breathe and they don't have an inhaler, that's not okay. So we have the power to make a change. And that's what I've begun to embrace in this stage of my career, is that we can harness that power for good to help our children breathe better.
Oh, very well stated. What comes next for SAMPRO? You mentioned, you know, some updates to the website and making that as even more robust. But are there other programs in development, or is there a next phase for this?
Well, right now, I think this was our focus, is to get the toolkits out. And then the next phase is to determine where do we go from here? So definitely getting our website to be user-friendly and incorporation of more outreach and collaboration with other organizations who feel the same is in our future. How could we stop duplicating all these things in these little silos and come together as one? It'll only help our children. So how we will do that, I'm not sure yet, but I know that's in our future. So stay tuned to figure out how we connect all those dots.
Yeah, one thing I've always struggled with is really objectively studying implementation of programs like this. Do you know, are there efforts underway or currently in place where you can actually track the data and see how many eligible school districts are actually filling these prescriptions within each state, or is that a major gap that we're facing?
It is a major gap that we're facing. However, data infrastructure within schools is limited. The ability for them to collect accurate data on a consistent basis is a problem because they're understaffed and under-resourced. However, we recognize that as a gap, and the Illinois Department of Public Health, at least where I'm at, has invested in us to be able to track how it does the rescue program work within Illinois, how is it adopted, how is it utilized, and what are the outcomes of children. So starting September 1st, that'll be a new effort of mine to be able to start tracking not only how do we get this implemented, but how do we ensure that it's actually gaining the impact that we had hoped for it to. And so that's the next phase in Illinois, as we are really pushing for implementation. We got 80% of the schools, all their stuff, if not now, but right before school starts, that what are we doing, and are we doing it the best way we can, or do we need to adapt and change, and can we continue that funding in a different way, maybe more, expand to 100% of schools, ensure funding year to year. So that impact analysis of health policy will be difficult, but it's what we're embarking on this upcoming year.
Oh, that's great. There's always more to be done, right?
Oh, always.
Well, Dr. Papalardo, this has been a very, very helpful conversation. Again, I encourage everybody to check out the website. We'll link to that in our show notes if you're on the web version of our podcast. And thank you again for taking the time to be with us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add about anything at all before we depart?
No, thank you everyone for listening, and thanks to the Quad AI for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, it's our pleasure. We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Please visit www.aaai.org for show notes and any pertinent links from today's conversation. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify so you can receive new episodes in the future. Thank you again for listening.